is Davin's Den. Is Davin's Den.
Oakley Dokley, we are backily. I don't know why I said that. I like saying Oakley Dokley. All right. Let's do some. Don't look at me like that, Joe. I like doing some comics in the news. Let me find that. Celebrity politician. Celebrity preacher. Oh, I remember that game. We had games. We should play more games. Comics in the news. Here we go.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
It's a little much, too.
Yeah. I was trying to add a little gravitas to it.
That was in the parameters that you gave me.
That was I understand. It's a little much.
Yeah.
A little repetitive.
And now he's critiquing himself.
Nope. Make it 15 seconds.
That's made it 17 seconds.
That 2 seconds overdid
well,
it.
Well, it was the same shit.
Bong, bong.
Exactly. We get a bong, bong. Very nice. Let's go. All right. So we'll do some... So we're talking Patton Oswalt, something we've talked about before.
Yeah.
Given his... feelings on the responsibility of comedians, society, and audience. Patton Oswalt, famous comedian, I would say.
Yeah.
I've grown to like Patton Oswalt more and more.
Me too.
This is him. With unparalleled scrutiny, a punishing trend of no apologies, and audiences who've grown up in echo chambers, it's a tough moment to be a comedy. But according to Emmy and Grammy-winning comedian Patton Oswalt, these factors are part of what make comedy today so crucial. I think we have a social responsibility whether we want it or not. We can't just get on stage and talk about dating or airline food anymore. Oswalt has long, 49 has long been a proponent of comedy in the service of advocacy and activism. Comedy is meant to be a means of interrogating the times in which we live and the values we hold. Oswalt has often argued, pointing to the work of comedians such as Pryor and Carlin, known for provocative, socially minded material. But today's landscape leaves so little room for truly progressive comedy, especially when both sides are out for blood rather than genuine dialogue. It's a scalp hunting for either side of the political spectrum. It shows how degraded the discourse has become. It's a function of the tribalism and bipartisanship.
Oh, we have no sound.
What the fuck? Yes, we do.
We do?
Yeah, we do.
Oh.
I don't know.
Lisa said no sound.
I don't know why she said no sound. Everything's working on our end, so maybe she has to reboot. We are fine.
Okay.
Thank you, though, Lisa, for the heads up.
Yeah.
She just might have to restart it or sign that back on and sign
yeah,
back in.
Yeah, I mean, that's really weird. I just thought I'd mention it before we went on too far.
No, no. Last time, we did freeze.
Yeah,
but
okay.
This time, we did not freeze.
And now Lisa's freezing.
Right.
Uh-huh.
It's a function of tribalism and bipartisanship that shapes people's lives, Oswalt said, that go fundamentally against the nature of comedy. It's supposed to be challenging, but challenging material is suddenly unpalatable to so many people who aren't used to hearing perspectives or problems outside their own. Comedy isn't meant to be catered to the audience, Oswalt said. It's catered to the comedian. The polarizing political landscape has also birthed a tendency to stick by problematic statements instead of just admitting mistake. Comedy's supposed to be expressive and organic. Sometimes it constrains dangerous territory. But not allowing comedians to step back and say, I'm sorry, leaves no room for growth and just breeds more binary conversation. Why is it now we're in this weird, fake-proud, no-apology culture where somehow you're weak if you say, I got that wrong? Saying that you won't apologize is like saying, I have no more need to evolve or learn. This unforgiving culture is stifling. Comedians are supposed to flirt with the boundaries of what's acceptable, but it's tough to do that when it feels like a single mistake can ruin a career. The audience has to rise to be more open to content so comedians can be freer to use comedy as a tool for progress. The line for what's acceptable is always moving, Oswalt said. But ideally, if comedians are doing their jobs, that shouldn't matter. I do think it's gotten tougher to do comedy because of the audiences and the clubs. But I've seen this since I got in. It's just getting more and more difficult.
Yeah, it seems to me that as somebody from outside looking into stand-up, it seems like there's less room to play and to, like, like he says, make mistakes, and because people are just completely unforgiving of any little, you know, thing that's the outside of what they consider the boundaries.
The one place where I find that's different is New York City.
Yes.
Because I use the clubs in New York City when I do, for the most part, I use them to play around and try new stuff and push. Now they're mostly liberal audiences for the most part. And I'll tease them about that. Any Trump fans? I go, of course not. We're in the Village. But, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's and I've said many times, the better I've gotten as a comedian, the harder this is.
Yeah, well, people are just like, oh, I'm insulted. It's like you're at a comedy show.
I think I agree with a couple of things. Well, where he says comics have a social responsibility. Comic has a responsibility to talk about what they feel like. I mean, you don't go out and doing comedy and going, I have a social responsibility. You go out and you talk about things that affect you that make people laugh.
I don't think there's a social responsibility, but I think the greats do it.
Yes.
Well, like I said, comedy is about what comedy does is comedy rips curtains away from bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is where you comic can get in trouble is somebody had to hang the curtains, you know, and then, you know, and you get in trouble with that. And sometimes, you know, I'll do my stuff and I do a little political stuff and my stuff that can be a little right wing and I complain, you know, and I goof on
only
a lot
when
of
you
stuff.
Say Hail Trump. That's the only part.
Well,
that's
funny,
a little much.
But stuff I do. You know, I goof on
your heels.
Yeah, exactly.
I goof on all sorts of things that people could rub the wrong way. But a lot of times, you know, an audience, it might go, all right, you know, but people come up after. I agree with you, you know. And I was working.
There's nothing more a comic wants than after a show is a rousing round of agreement.
But that's the thing if you want to walk that line, you know. And one of our comic friends, I was doing a show with him, and he goes, I like what you're doing. Keep doing it. I go, it's a lot of lonely nights sometimes. I go, don't stop.
Easy for him to say. Because when you walk that line, you know, Patton Oswalt's in a different place.
Yeah.
People are coming to see Patton Oswalt, so they know what he's going to do.
This is a name.
Yeah, you know, Joe and I are not the names we should be.
No.
So you don't necessarily know what you're going to expect, so you are going to get more people that are likely to be offended and not expect it and come out and go, I just wanted to laugh.
Right. Well, right. That's the thing, is that he's saying that, I mean, there is that. I mean, as much as, like, I'll go to music for a second, as much as there are people that are breaking boundaries with music or they're like a niche performer, there are people that just want to hear the top 40. They just want to dance to it. They want something that goes thump, thump, thump.
Right, people want to go and have a good time.
They want to just laugh.
Look, there are comics that we work with all the time that go out and do the generic stuff, and they do very well.
But it's soul crushing to watch.
But yeah. But it's
the
like
cable guy.
But I didn't get into. I mean, my idols were Carlin,
yeah,
you know, and guys like that. And I, if there's something that bothers me, I'm going to try to make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I.
It's a lot harder to walk the path that Patton Oswalt talks about walking.
Yes, it is.
Because you know, when you're not Patton Oswalt, the club owner might be a big right wing or left wing guy, depending on what you're doing. He doesn't want you talking that shit on his stage,
right?
Or you know, somebody gets upset with something. You talk about a war, and you know they don't want to hear about that.
Yeah,
and they get a complaint. The next thing you know, that a comic is no longer working there. Although you know, I've pretty much thrown some amount of caution to the wind. I pretty much talk about it, but I'm much more untethered here.
Yes.
On this radio show than even in my act.
Oh, yeah. Well, because nobody's going to call the booker on you here.
No, I'm the booker.
<That's funny. laughs> But the article does bring up Samantha Bee, Michelle Wolfe, and Roseanne Barr, which, I mean, the whole Barr thing, we could argue till the cows come home. We have done.
Roseanne's coming home?
Funny. But with Samantha Bee and Michelle Wolfe, you know, they get called up because they're saying, you know, they're saying all this, but they're taking that step. They're taking that leap. That's that's what comedy's
but the
about.
Only thing, they're getting called out because sponsors get pissed off.
But that's also true.
That's their boss. You know, you've often said when you talk to Adam Ferrara, he's going through the same shit we are, but on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're going with. We're dealing with the club in the middle of nowhere, New Jersey.
Yeah,
they're dealing with, you know, Procter and Gamble. It's the same shit.
It's the same thing because basically they get in trouble. They say, but that's the essence of comedy.
But it's not anymore.
No,
I agree. Comedy, what Patton Oswalt's saying,
comedy now is so unafraid to offend or anything like this. Like I was telling the story where I come home one night, I turn on Comedy Central, and there's a comic on stage. Oh my! When the wind blows, my eyebrows go like that because they're bushy. But then I turn like this, and they go back like that. What is this horse shit? I was talking to
you might be interested about manicuring the head.
No, but I was talking to a friend of mine. I go, I'm not pissed off as sour grapes as a comic. I'm pissed off and paying for basic cable, and this is the horse shit that they're putting on.
Yeah, but people like to hear about bushy eyebrows.
You know, but it's weird. It's weird the way the comedy is. When I was like, I told the story, the band was playing in Brooklyn last month, and they were doing a comedy show across the street, and I went. It was all these hipster comedians and stuff like that. I did not laugh once.
Yeah,
laugh once. Everybody around me was laughing. But I tried to be object. I did not laugh once. And it's not even the thing where, you know, if I was on this show, I would go up and kick ass. No, I would have been ridden out of town on a rail because
yes.
That's not my audience.
Right.
But it's so safe and boring. No punchline. No, you know?
I think less of the comics that do the safe stuff. But audiences love them because so many people just want to go out. They don't want to think. They want to have a good time. They want to, you know, the pull my finger of comedy. They you know, talk about the differences between men and women, cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And then you got people, you know, like us or other people who are trying to talk about current topics.
Yeah.
And it's a harder sell.
I was weaned on Carlin, and you know, listening to
his nipple was a little sore, by the way.
So I'm listening to Class
Clown. Got spit almost. You know. Look at that. That's more than hollow. She can't keep her liquids in.
Holy shit!
Get the tarp, Joe.
Funny. No, we're doing reeds, but nonetheless, but
it was quite succulent over there.
But you know, Carlin came out against the seven dirty words, Catholicism, the Vietnam War. You know, all of that lightning rod stuff. That as a little kid, I'm like, yeah. And when I started doing you know, as I progressed as a comic and there were things I would read on the news that upset me, I would start goofing on it. I would start bring to the stage. And, you know, some nights, I go, depending on the audience, I'd do really well. Or sometimes, you know, it would be a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting, and it's kind of pie in the sky, where he goes, the comedian shouldn't cater the material to the audience. The audience should cater themselves to the comic. It doesn't really happen like that.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I write like
that,
but
I get what he says.
Yeah.
And I support what he says, but I don't have
the
credits.
I can't get on stage in the middle of fucking Wisconsin after just coming off of CNN and saying something that the president did that thoroughly upset me and open my show with fuck Trump. I can't do that.
No.
Because at some level, I got to get the audience on my side.
Yes.
You can't just fucking berate them like some comics do. Yeah, I guess you can when you're Patton Oswalt's level.
He has that luxury.
And luxury, but I think he also has that disconnect
that
he's got a size of success where he's doing theaters. This is his bread and butter. He's good. Where he has the luxury of doing that. For guys like us that are going out to the regular clubs, you know, on a Thursday through Saturday, we don't have that luxury.
No, we don't have that luxury.
We love it. We try to write that way. There are good nights and bad nights. Sometimes you have I don't know about you, but there are nights when I want to play the game, and there are nights when I don't want to play the game.
Yeah.
I'll rearrange my act where I'm softballing stuff because I really don't feel like playing the game.
My problem is
tonight.
I just don't remember my jokes that were the fucking easier shit to do. My problem is like all this shit is like current events and touchy.
Yeah, well, I try to do that too, you know. But there are nights, Dad, that I'm going up and I'm going to discuss it. And there are nights I just don't want to play the fucking game. I just want to go up, softball shit, have fun, have some drinks, and go home.
So,
you know?
He does talk about how it's harder to say I'm sorry. And it's weird because it wasn't that long ago, and I think we still hear it, honestly, where people just apologize because they have to apologize.
Yes.
And now he's saying, well, people don't back down. I really don't know who's not. Michelle Wolf didn't back down. She's the one. Samantha Bee apologized.
Yes.
Roseanne Barr apologized.
Yes.
So I don't know who he's talking about who isn't apologizing. The president doesn't apologize.
Maybe
Samantha Bee, I don't think, apologized.
No, she apologized.
I'm sorry. I stand corrected. I apologize. I'm wrong.
Yeah, you can apologize.
Yeah, look at that.
Right.
That's how it's done.
Quick, too. We didn't even have to get calls from sponsors.
I don't think Michelle Wolf had to apologize because it was a roast.
No, I understand, but she did it.
But here's the deal. She didn't. She shouldn't have to. The other two didn't. But Michelle, it's a roast. It's not a TV. It's a TV, but it's not a series where she could go up and she can come under scrutiny. Go fuck yourself. I'll say what I want. This is funny. People like, but it's just no repercussions.
Listen, there's two people who I know who didn't say, I'm sorry, Michelle Wolf
right.
and Anthony Cumia. Everybody else, else pretty much apologizes.
Yes, they did.
I mean, for the most part, or you know, where they.
Well, Anthony's thing is if Anthony apologized, and he's told me this, if Anthony apologized, it would ruin Eddie because he was always saying, I'm not apologetic. It would ruin any credibility he had and would have done more damage to his career than getting fired from Sirius XM over those photos. Because he got fired, it is what it is. He's, you know.
I think Patton Oswalt's missing the. Listen, the president doesn't apologize, and he said this to people. He thinks it's weakness to apologize, which to me shows his weakness. Because there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm sorry, I got that wrong. To me, as Patton talks about, it shows you have room to grow.
Yeah, but you want to know something? I bet he picks – I don't – maybe he's doing a movie. What, he doesn't have a regular series. Guarantee if he gets offered a series and now he has got a regular series – You know, I mean, I don't
sure
know
how he'll apologize.
I don't. Yeah,
and he has sponsors
I right,
to
you know.
Count out to.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know exactly what he's talking about.
His position. Sure, yeah, he's in a position. He's in a position where he could take that stance because he, at this juncture in his career, really doesn't have anything to lose. He goes and sells out a theater. He's a very funny guy. I disagree with his politics vehemently, but he's a very funny. You're right.
What?
But he's but still, he's a very funny guy. I would go see him. You know. But
he would go to be enraged. You would hate watch him.
Hate watch.
No, funny. We've discussed this before. Funny's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, if he brings up a funny point, that's funny. He's a fun, very funny, talented guy.
Smart
and
guy.
He'll sell out. You know, he'll sell out a theater, and you go to see that for his thoughts. Those are his thoughts.
Hey, I would go see Dennis Miller if he was funny, but he's not.
He's not anymore.
He's not funny. That's why I said before, when Joe said funny, it was like Dennis Miller, but funny.
I would love to go see Dennis Miller and Bill Maher. I think they had a couple of debates. I'd like to see if they have another debate.
You know what? Bill Maher's got a show coming special. I should check that out. I'm not a fan of his stand-up. Like his show. Like his TV show a lot.
But
I'm not a fan of his stand-up.
But they would debate. You know, they're kind of from the same, you know, that cerebral thing. And I'd love to see those.
Jon Stewart would run circles around both them, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think he's probably smarter than both of them.
Yeah, I think so,
and less smug.
Right, and the funny thing is, he's more cutting. If you're smug, you're going to deliver your line in a prophetic sense, where Jon Stewart just cuts through the bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I like Bill Maher's show, but I think Stewart was probably the best out of all these that we've seen in this time, the political commentator.
Yeah, comic. and he's also...
D.L. Hughley's very good, too. You've never heard of him?
No, I have.
Your mouth is open like a cock might fly into it. What's going on?
I don't know. Cocks could fly.
Sure. Yeah, they usually feet spring them into action. But if you look quickly, a cock will fly right at you.
If whatever they're attached to is wearing Air Jordans, sure.
Flying cocks. You got to be careful. You don't want to lose an eye.
Learn something every night.
Which could skin your head. That's why you got to keep that thing waxed. You don't want to get a ball the head friction on your head there, Joe. Cause more burns.
Learn something every Tuesday.
That's why you make the drive.
Funny.
All right. This is a lengthy interview, but it's an interesting interview. You guys heard this, how Jon Stewart called our president on Air Force One.
Yeah. Jon Stewart. Stuttering John.
Stuttering John. Yeah, I was like, Jon Stewart?
No, that's not. Yeah. Stuttering John. Yeah. Yes. He impersonated a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
And he got through to Air Force One. It's a lengthy cut, but we'll listen to it and then.
I gotta hear this.
You haven't heard it?
No.
Why would you listen to what I sent?
However, reportedly pranked, a radio shock jock claiming he was patched through to the commander in chief. NBC News is not able to confirm that took place, but the White House has not denied that it happened. Comedian John Melendez, aka Stuttering John, has released audio of what he says was his exchange with the President of the United States, President Trump, under the impression he was speaking with Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey.
Yes, this is Senator Menendez. Is the President available? Yep, one moment, sir. I'll connect your call. Sir, your call is connected. Hi, Bob. Hey, how are you? How are you? Congratulations on everything. We're proud of you. Congratulations. Great job. You went through a tough, tough situation, and I don't think a very fair situation, but congratulations.
Well, a short time ago, I had a chance to speak with John Melendez, that being the comedian, as there are lots of questions about White House security and protocols as a result of this. Walk us through how this came about. The New York Times saying the President of the United States would seem to be a long-shot target here for somebody hoping to make a prank phone call. How did you decide to do this? How did you decide that it might be doable?
Well, you know, just given the fact of how disorganized the Trump administration has been from the get-go, I mean, what other, administration would fall, you know, wouldn't be susceptible to get duped so easily. So, so me and my producer on my podcast said, you know what, let's give it a shot. Let's see how far I can go. But the sad part is,
I did the worst English accent known to me. I was like, hello, this is Sean Moore. Senator Menendez's assistant. We want to get the president on the phone. How do they not know that's a goof? And then, you know, they call me back from the White House. They go, we have one question. This is the only screening question they had. And they asked me, why are you on an 818 area code?
This is a Los Angeles area code.
Yeah. They're asking why I'm on an 818 area code. And I go, oh, it's because we're on holiday. So, I mean, apparently they don't understand that your cell phone area code doesn't change when you go to L.A.
So he was in North Dakota when you called. Eventually you get a call from Jared Kushner, his son-in-law and advisor. Walk us through how that came about and what you said to Jared Kushner.
Well, you know, when we left the podcast, you know, they said he was in North Dakota. I'm surprised they didn't give me his longitude and latitude. I mean, but they told me where the president was and that I would get a call back. Now, I thought it might be over. But then, like, I don't know, a half an hour later, I get a call from Jared Kushner in Air Force One, and he's like, and, you know, granted, I'm answering the phone with this voice, this bad Long Island accent of mine, and then as soon as I go, hey, I go, hello, hello, and I go, yes, and he goes, this is Jared Kushner, and then I put on my fake English accent again. Oh, hello, Jared, this is Sean Moore, and I mean, how do they not know this is a scam? It's, like, so obvious. But then Jared goes, I can get the president now for you, but he's in a meeting, or if I can have him call you back. And I said, please have him call back, because I knew I had to call my friend in New York to record it. And then he said, oh, one more question. What do you want to speak, what does the senator want to speak to the president about? And I said, the senator had a long conversation with the president about immigration, and we wanted to get some closure on it. Who knows if that ever happened? I don't think so. And he goes, okay, great. And that was it. And then 20 minutes later, I get a call from the president on Air Force One.
What's the goal here? You get him on the phone, you talk to the president of the United States, you say, and it lasts about 6 minutes. Once you start talking to him, is the goal just to keep him on the hook to make this last as long as it does? You play it pretty straight. I mean, you have a conversation, as you say, about immigration legislation. You talk about who might be the next Supreme Court justice, who he might nominate for that job. What was your strategy going into the call once you realized you were going to have a chance to talk to him?
Well, quite honestly, like, I didn't prepare any jokes. Like, normally, you know, that's what I would have done, but we never thought we would get this far. I mean, we hoped we would, but we just, you know, so we didn't think we'd get this far, so I just went with the things that were on my mind, which is immigration and, you know, the separation of kids from their families and, you know, at the border, and also I am deeply concerned about the Supreme Court justice and his pick, because, I mean, you know, if we have a conservative Supreme Court, it's going to be really bad, especially for the social issues, and that's a big concern of mine. So I wanted to see what the president was going to say about who his appointee is going to be. I was really trying to do have a conversation. And you know what? If I could just say something,
sure.
it really bothers me, though, because Senator Menendez has come out and said, I wish I could have this conversation with Donald Trump. Now, here's my question to Senator Menendez. Why not pick up the phone and do what I did and have the conversation? I mean, I did. You know, why aren't these senators, if they're concerned with these issues, pick up the phone and try and talk to the president? Maybe you can make some headway. But, you know, I can't understand that either.
So what's the takeaway that you have from this? What should we take away from the experience you've had being able to reach the president? Is it, as you said, this system surrounding him is apparently pretty lax, that anybody can get through to talk to the president of the United States? What do you want us to take away from what you were able to do?
Well, I think I've proven how easily this administration can get duped, and it makes me, really, really believe, the president's association with Putin and the Russians before the election. I thoroughly believe that, this is an organization, an administration in disarray. And I think this points out that, and Donald Trump has got to be embarrassed by the people he's hired to do his screening. Look, they didn't ask me any questions to verify if it was the senator. They could have asked me what state he was senator of, and I wouldn't have been able to answer.
You wouldn't have known.
I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known because I just used Menendez because it sounds like Melendez.
I was going to ask you why you picked him of all people.
If they would ask what party affiliation the senator had, I would have been stumped because I would have known. They didn't ask me any questions to prove that I was a senator. Now that's a scary thing. I mean, wouldn't you say for the people working around the president that they don't even. I mean, I had a harder time getting into MSNBC today than I did to get through to the president.
John, has there been any recourse? Have you heard from the White House? Have you heard from the Secret Service, any other government agency since this happened, since you posted that audio?
Yes. In fact, last night when I showed up to my house, two of the neighborhood kids were waiting outside my door, and they said that the Secret Service was at my door, and they were knocking around 7 o'clock last night, and they showed them their badges. Now, you know, I've spoken to Michael Avenatti, and who may have to represent me in this. Uh-huh. If Donald wants to have me arrested over this, I mean, it's a gray area because there is I do have a First Amendment right, and I'm also a comedian. Now, yes, then they could say, well, I impersonated a senator, but then I made no. This wasn't something where I could make money out of. There was no harm done. And if anything, I had a somewhat intelligent conversation with the president. So, I mean, if they decide to go after me, they're just going to make this even a bigger story. And, knowing Donald and how easily he gets mad, he might come after me. And it's sad because I used to be a friend of Donald's. I used to have dinner with him. And that's another thing, just so you know.
Sure.
The whole conversation, I'm talking to him. You have to understand, I've had numerous conversations on the phone with Donald as Stuttering John. I mean, I used to call him for real estate advice, when I lived in Manhattan. I have had dinner with Donald. I've had lunch with him and Melania. I've had drinks with them at an NBC party. And how does he not know it's me? And I'll answer that question for you. Because when you're with Donald, Donald only talks, and he doesn't listen. So even in the conversation, Donald likes to talk about Donald. You know, when I had lunch with him, I think I got three words in, and Melania got two words in, and the rest of the hour-long lunch was Donald talking about Donald.
John Melendez, who goes by the name of Stuttering John, joined me just a little while ago. He claims to have had that.
Okie dokie. All right. I gotta say, I think it's a little too easy to get onto Air Force One and call the president.
Also, there was a press conference. Also, I got a call from Baba Booey. Baba Booey graduated from Great Ideas.
Senator Baba Booey
called as well.
Calling Air Force One, and why is Jared Kushner the
call
screen? What the fuck is going on, Joe?
I don't know.
We have better call screeners here, and it's me.
See yourself booked on Air Force One.
Well, what I'm thinking is now maybe we have to have a patch General McIvey through. might be the time to talk some military strategy. I mean, now that we know it can be done.
I know. I think General McIvey could actually talk some sense to him.
You're doing great, great.
No, I know General McIvey's alter ego. There'll be no sense talking. Might be some ass kissing, but there'll be no
sense. It's an honor, sir.
Yes.
It's an absolute honor. General McIvey, you're one of the great ones. Thank you, sir.
You're one of the great ones.
You're one of the great ones.
familiar with your record. You serve with distinction.
Who's chief of staff now? Who's the
Kelly.
Kelly, yeah. I'm going to be with Kelly now. You'll work with Kelly. McIvey and Kelly, big, great, great team.
I'd like to have you as part of the cabinet. Seriously, you can get a position. It's not that hard. It's not that hard.
There's always an opening.
Yes, there's always an opening.
General McIvey, not a general, a dumb comic and a co-host.
Oddly enough, the person with the most credibility in the cabinet. I don't know. That General McIvey seems to really straighten things out.
I'm a good expediter. That's one of my...
good expediter.
That's why I try. That's
all those
pay
Mexicans
my mortgage.
Gone. It wasn't expediting.
getting shit done.
Yeah, no, I think General McIvey a fine addition to the presidential cabinet. But like, put him in charge of the EPA, be less corruption.
Yeah.
Because McIvey knows he shows up here with that bullshit, he's going to have somebody to answer.
I want a new desk, an expensive one.
An expensive one.
Made out of non-renewable wood.
So that might be a project to get McIvey to call...
That's funny.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? I have. If Stuttering John can do it, Stupid Joe can do it.
Yeah. I didn't even realize he was doing a podcast.
Well, no, now does. Everybody does.
He got in a whole thing with Anthony Cumia and Artie Lang, and he was ripping Anthony apart.
Who was
Stuttering John
on the show?
No, on Twitter. Oh. So he's the Anthony's a piece of shit, and Artie's taking advantage of him. John's nuts. He's nuts.
Is he?
So yeah. So I
got past Jared Kushner.
He was saying something about Anthony didn't like my ad. Blah blah blah. So I was at the show with Ant watching John because John was at the brokerage doing stand up, and I wrote. I go, John, not for nothing. I go, your stand up is open mic at best. And I go,
means a lot coming from you. Way to put a little gasoline on that fire.
I'm not done yet. So I go, dude, I go, it's open mic at I'm sorry to say. I go, you had the whole cachet of the Stern Show. Never got better. Maybe that's why you feel so inadequate or something like that, right?
Ooh,
so
my friend
Dennis goes, he goes, I saw where you wrote Stuttering John. He goes, do you know he found clips of you and was ripping you apart? And I go, I don't give a shit. He's done more to get my clips on the internet than I have.
I don't understand how Stuttering John's not calling me for this type of show.
Yeah, yeah.
if you're going to rip Joe apart, I feel like I should be on the short list.
He could tag team.
Well, he goes, you put your clips on. Really? Finally, somebody's doing some of the fucking things.
I wonder which clips.
I don't know. I don't know.
Huh. But what, he was on his own podcast ripping you up?
Yeah, or apparently he was on Twitter or something like that. Because
he's punching down.
He got pissed off.
Yeah.
Pissed off that I made. But you know what? The funny thing is he's ripping Ann apart. And I'm sorry. It's the schoolyard. You fuck with my friend, I'll fuck with you.
Yeah.
Because Anthony can't defend himself, especially on Twitter. He's
a delicate flower. No, he can. But isn't
Anthony off Twitter?
Yeah, he's under another name.
I know. He's had another couple of other names.
Yeah.
So he's under another name?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was on there today.
It's not fucking... It's not top secret. It's fucking Twitter, stupid. Relax.
You're the one that brought it up.
No, but you also you got like... He's under another name.
He was on there today? No, he's under... he's under there today.
Aunt Millie.
Right. Okay. So...
Thank you, Acid Trip.
You're welcome.
I understand, but I don't
care. I got a little cold here in the basement, and so I wrapped myself in when a... Devin's family's blanket.
A multi-colored explosion of color blanket. And it looks like we invited an acid trip in as a guest.
You know how Joe feels about multiple colors. You fucking triggered him. He's going to port you in the blanket. That at all.
Funny.
Our final comics in the news. Pop star Ariana Grande is engaged to Pete Davidson, Saturday Night Live. You know that?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
All right. She responded to criticism over a resurfaced joke made by Davidson about the deadly bombing at her 2017 Manchester concert. Last fall, in a stand-up appearance at the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles, Davidson said the bombing must have made Grande realize how famous she had become because Britney Spears didn't have a terrorist attack at her concert. So, on Wednesday, the following comment was posted on Twitter. I respect Ariana, and I want her to be happy in everything, but she was just broken after the Manchester bombing, so I don't know why she is still with Pete. Like, yeah, he made that joke a while ago, but, like, it's not funny. It's just rude. This is my opinion. Obviously, you posted it stupid.
This is somebody else's opinion.
So she responded, "This has been very tough and conflicting on my heart. He uses comedy to help people feel better, not the victims, about how effed up things in this world are. We all deal with trauma differently. I, of course, didn't find it funny. No Nookie that night." No, she didn't write that. It was months ago. And his attention is never malicious, but it was unfortunate. Davidson has personal experience with the lasting effects of terrorism. He was 7 years old when his father, a New York City firefighter, Scott Davidson, was killed in the attacks of September 11th. So are terrorist attacks off limits?
I think the joke was funny.
I did, too.
The joke was funny.
But we're not engaged to him.
Right.
We're not victims of terror.
Right, but I don't think that terror attacks are off limits. I mean, like, the minute they happen, if you're making fun of, like, you know, people dying and stuff, like, that's really very gross. But he was just turning it around and making it about, you know, the ludicrousness of fame and what makes you famous and what...
It was a very good joke. I'm sorry.
It was good.
Because...
Why are you apologizing? He didn't.
I know, but... yeah, that's true. But like I said, the joke is like that the terrorists decided that she was famous enough where they could cause all this damage to Britney Spears. They don't go to Britney Spears.
And they're not out of Britney Spears.
You know?
It's funny.
It gets back to what Patton Oswalt was saying.
Right.
Where, you know, you make a commentary and you shouldn't be backing down. I'm sorry. This is comedy.
It's dark humor, but I find dark humor to be very funny.
Yeah, well, obviously you're here. But it is interesting. Like, do you ever worry that, like, jokes you make on stage or here even, like, say something that, like, a family member will have to apologize for? Like you're reflecting badly on loved ones?
You know, yes, yes.
That's probably why you go under an assumed name.
So basically, if you're doing something about a family member or something like that?
No, just in general, if you say something like just anything off color. Like it could be a family member or something that might be some considered poor taste. It reflects badly upon somebody that you love.
I got in big trouble one time. This is going back about maybe 15 years ago. And I did a joke about because my sister-in-law, God rest her soul, we were fighting like cats and dogs about something. I think it was when she came over to my house and she got really drunk and stuff like that. So I went up and I started making I did a bit about my sister-in-law, my drinking sister-in-law and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I forgot the joke, but I'm at another comedy show and I have Joanne with me.
Uh-oh.
And this one comic goes, yeah, it was very funny a couple of weeks ago when you did that whole thing about your sister-in-law and stuff like that. Joanne goes, what joke did you do? I go, Rosemary Tricking. You ever goof on any of my family members again, you're fucking dead. How fucking dare you goof on my sister like that on stage? How dare you? And I go, Joanne, I'm making a light. You want to know something? And it was that whole situation at the house where she brought this up. And you know what? I'm a comic and I'm going to go up and goof on it.
Yeah.
I never, ever, ever wanted. There was a big fucking fight that night. Big fucking fight on the way home.
Did she not know you?
Well, you know what? I get that, though. I mean, yeah. I pray to God nobody listens to this show.
Yeah.
No, I get that, though. I mean, it's a hard line to walk, because unless people in your life are all on board with everything you do.
Right.
And it seems like even Ariana Grande is on board with everything he does.
Yeah.
It can reflect poorly on them.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, I don't really worry about it reflecting badly on Mr. Helix, for example, or my brother, because they're both just as twisted and messed up as I am. But, I mean, there's a reason why I use a pseudonym, is because I am worried that things that we talk about here and the darker side of my personality would reflect badly on my employer. And that would come back and bite me in the ass big time.
Yeah, I get, you know... And, you know, maybe he does have to be a little bit more watchful, because let's be honest, she's a bigger star than he is.
Yeah, she is.
But even a small thing, there was a night, we did a Platsky night at Governor's, and I'm on the show.
Platsky night.
And
we had the plumbing and the plumbers and the pipes. But, Platsky night.
You going to come to the shop, we'll record.
Not saying no.
But that was a weird night for me, because I have a double-edged sword. I am working for Governors that night.
Right.
And I am also representing Platsky that night.
Right.
So I had to choose my material. I did not do my regular act, because I had to kind of be milquetoast.
Yep,
because
yep,
nonetheless, and I felt more of an employee of Platsky that night than I did of Governors. Because my whole thing was to make the show a success for that, you know, do my set well, but make the show. So it was a very weird night where I really had it. I didn't really do my political stuff. I was very middle of the road and stuff like that, because I'm representing, even though I'm in Governors and I'm on the job at Governors, I'm representing Platsky because it's a Platsky sponsored night. So yeah,
you had to read the audience and do what you could do.
And it also goes back to where freedom of speech is a comic. You know, obviously, a TV series isn't like working for Platsky, but the thing about it is, I'm representing the company that night, and you have to be respectful of the company.
Yeah, of course.
And you have to choose your material, whether it's your day program or you have a sitcom or something like that, you know. And God forbid if I said anything wrong or a customer got offended, I'd have to call that customer the next time.
You stink.
So, Joe, as I was spying on you on Facebook, you know, doing my due...
monitoring
creep.
Me.
Making sure you behave in the off week. Not leaving you to your own devices. Doing my own due diligence. I see... There is some more to a previous you stink.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Safe Flights at it again.
Oh, what?
All right. The trim piece, like I said, I ordered the guy, when he originally fixed the windshield, broke all the clips that hold the trim piece in. And I had to wait for them to order the trim piece and the clips. A guy comes back. The guy that knows what he's doing comes back, and he puts on the trim piece. That was the trim pieces. I think everything is well. I'm driving the truck for about a week, and I hear a shaking, and I go and I hit the trim piece. I go, I don't know. I'm on the way to a gig last Saturday night. I'm on the Long Island Expressway, and all of a sudden, I hear a little whee!
No!
The trim piece goes flying off.
Behind you? Does it hit anybody?
No, it doesn't hit anybody, but it lands on the road, on the expressway.
Great.
And I go, well, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to turn around? I'm not going to go into the HOV lane and get wrist hit by a car to find this dumb trim piece.
No way.
So what I did, though, is I was going to go see the car. I go to the classic car shows. They have it at the beach. So I was an early Sunday morning, and I go in the area. I don't see it. So I go, well, it's not my problem.
Did you expect it to be there in one piece?
You don't look. You may.
Yeah, you never know.
We found my bag in Myrtle Beach. You know,
it wasn't on a fucking expressway. It was in a parking lot.
That's true. But nonetheless, so I call up Safe Flight and I go, yes, I'd like to order. You guys got to fix this trim piece. Now, meanwhile, I got to get another vehicle. I just laid out $800 last week because my brakes and all the and my truck's on the way out, and I can't go car shopping until I get the trim piece fixed. I got to clean up the car, so I'm going to use the truck as a trade. So I got to go through all that. So I call up Safe Flight, and they go, okay, we're going to order the trim. We'll order the trim piece for you in the clips.
Again.
So I, and this was last Friday, so I call them. Oh, we'll let you know. So they leave a message, and they go, yesterday, and they go, oh, Mr. Curry, we have the trim piece in the clips. Come on by. And come get them. And I call them. I go, no. You're coming to the day program, and you're putting this on here. Oh, you want us to come here? Yeah, that's the least you could do since you can't put shit on correctly.
Since you said it's spinning down the Long Island Expressway.
So they go, they're going to be, so this is yesterday. We'll be there Thursday. Luckily, they're so lucky. I'm up to my ass this week because the little Davin popped on my shoulder. You tell this bitch you want her here tomorrow morning, and I'm like, I can't, little Davin. You know what? Because I'm up.
I can't, little Davin.
It's just not worth the. It's not worth the argument because I'm up to my ass this whole week with everything. So if they come Thursday, they come Thursday. However, if I didn't have, I got stuff to do. I got the rehearsal and stuff like that. I would be car shopping this week.
Yeah.
And I tell you, Monday morning, but I don't know what the problem is with. I never had this problem before with Safe Flight. It's the same shop because it's in Westbury where I work. They get a you stink because just incompetent. It's your job.
Yeah.
It's not like me and my buddy Dave worked on this on Sunday.
Right.
What are you going to do? We'll just have to be careful. No, it's your job.
Did you start yelling at them? Safe Flight Repair, Safe Flight Replace.
No, I tweeted that. I just did. But the thing about it is, what am I going to do? I want this for free. It is. It's covered by insurance.
I told you what you should do. You should ask for a different shop to handle because these guys apparently are incompetent.
Are incompetent.
I would say, you know what? You need to send another shop. I'm 0 for 2 with you guys.
Hey, you know what? The hell is that?
I don't know.
Thank God that was me. Holy cow.
Oh, my God.
There'd be a lecture
now,
a lecture after the show.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, so, it's like.
Yeah, because I could just shut it off. I didn't have to fucking throw my phone like an animal, like it was a hand grenade. Because I know how to handle the volume, stupid.
That was hilarious.
What do I do with this? It's a phone, not a herpetic condom. What is wrong with you?
Herpetic condom? What is that?
A condom with herpes.
Oh.
Joe's phone started
fucking trying to get rid of the thing out of your hand.
Well, Joe's phone started going off, and he didn't know how to get rid of it. He just chucked
Joe's
it.
Always goes off.
I'm a busy man.
And Sharky.
Yeah. But you know, yeah. But that's the whole thing. So it's like, you know what my whole thing is? It keeps flying off. You keep coming back till the truck gets sold.
Well, this does bring up a bigger issue that Lisa is mentioning in the chat room, that people don't take pride.
I guess she can hear again.
Yes, she can. Good. That people don't take pride in their work. And I think that that's absolutely true. It used to be that even if you had the most humble job, you know, if, you know, you see people who are masons and they're repairing a porch and, you know, they take pride in it and they want it to look nice and they don't leave all of the mortar like hanging out in big bulges. They scrape it and they tidy it.
Yeah.
People don't do that kind of stuff with their work anymore.
I'll give you a case in point in that. I was down in Disney World years ago.
Okay.
But Disney World, you know, you pay a lot to get in there and it's very quality assured.
Yeah.
I watched a guy come up and change the plastic bag in a wastebasket.
Yeah.
And this guy, the way he did it was so attention to detail to make sure it fit just right. And he didn't just slap the thing on and slap the thing off like, I got a crap job, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, and I showed my girlfriend at the time, I go, that's attention to detail. That's the way they do things here.
Right.
And it shows, if you're doing that, like that,
mm-hmm.
then you must be doing a lot of other
things.
Well,
the mouse
right
is
too.
An evil overlord. You can't piss off the mouse.
That's true.
Fear of the mouse.
Wait, Joe and I just like you know, our sphincters tightened up.
Yes.
You don't piss off the mouse.
Yeah, we're like,
you're
oh,
not
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, everybody
but
knows.
It's just doing like the most simple job with a sense of quality to it.
Yes.
And nobody has a sense of quality. You know,
I
quality.
Do. This is why I need to pop up places and tell people they're doing it wrong.
Yes, you need to fix things.
There's a lot of things that need my fixing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like the Schneider. What was that show? One Day at a Time? No.
One Day at a Time.
Schneider.
Yes, yes. I'm the Schneider. I'm like the world's Schneider.
Going to fix this, Ms. Romano.
Exactly. I'll hit on a woman and I'll fix shit. It's kind of what I do. That's kind of my thing.
How do you have time for both?
I'm not good at either one.
There you go. Yeah, like him.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right. So on the break, so that is to be continued?
That yeah, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
On our last break, new music from Maisie with Don't Let 'Em and Claudia Balla with Perfect. And, of course, you can learn more about them at Deuce Music. Then we will do some Scamming Scammers with Jane, and then we'll be out of here.